The title of this conference by Father John Hardin is Our Faith, a Response to God's Revelation. Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin has been a consultant to the consortium from its beginning and is closely associated with its interests as a communication enterprise for religious women in the United States. Father Hardin.
Our theme for the day is the subject of faith. And we saw last night something of the crisis of faith in the world today. Though the backdrop is rather black, I think it was quite important to see the grave need for us to have a strong faith, pray for strength, to have a deeper faith, and above all, to look forward into the years to come for sharing our strength with others. Nothing convinces like conviction. Convinced people, strongly believing people, invariably strengthen others. This morning we want to look at our faith itself, to ask ourselves, what is it? Our answer is that faith is a response to God's revelation. The simplest and most accurate theological definition of faith is man's response to God's revelation. We therefore wish to look at three aspects of this revelation and response. So, what is revelation? What did God reveal? Or change the stress? You know, in English, an undeclined language, everything depends on where you put the stress. What did God reveal? What did God reveal? And then how should we respond? In plain language, God's revelation is His telling us that certain things are true and that we need to know them. Both, by the way, are part of God's revelation. The fact that certain things are true and that we need to know them. Yet all the while, in making His revelation, He also made it quite clear that only He fully understands what He reveals, so that we are asked to believe what He says just because He said so. If that sounds childish, it isn't. It is childlike. But then remember, Christ said, only that kind will make it. In order to reassure ourselves that this is not infantilism, let's backtrack for a few moments to reflect on purely human faith, to see how God, from our birth, has been preparing us for divine faith. From infancy, without reflecting on it, before we could read a book, which doesn't always help. We were instinctively responsive to the words, directives, sometimes the gestures, and depending on the need, also the penalties of others. Without anybody telling us, we spontaneously trusted Mother and Father. When we began to learn how to speak, our first reaction was not, "Now, just a minute, Mother. Do you know the meaning of what you're saying? Are you sure that's the way the word is pronounced?" Think of the stories we learned, not excluding Santa Claus. Of the vocabulary we learned, the numbers. Proudly, Mother would track us out before company, and now she can count up to, and depending on how good we were or well advanced, 10, 20. And if we're really smart, we wanted to show how good we could count, then we'd start adding and multiplying, and Mother would beam. All the while, all we knew was borrowed knowledge. As we grew into childhood, we went to school. After we had dried our tears in first grade or kindergarten, they began to teach us. Sister Leocretia, first grade, had 108 of us. Yet, what we were told, we believed. Right? Growing into adulthood, think of all the books we've read, the magazines. Think of all the programs we've listened to, the teachers we've had, the conversation, even the passing overhearing of a remark. If there is one thing instinctive to the human heart, it is to believe. So much so that we coin a word to describe its excess. We call it credulity. All of this then, the spontaneous, ready acceptance of the words of others, even though we knew they were subject to deception, by and large we do not question, because we know that on faith in human beings rests the welfare of human society. Go to hear this, sisters, for at least the 4 minutes it took me to tell it, so that we don't suddenly think that this believing in God without comprehending all that He reveals is something strange, that we are somehow spiritual oddballs, because the rest of the world is hard-bitten, skeptical, incredulous, and we, poor sheep, are the easy believers. Not so. For all practical purposes, except for our own internal experience, everything we know, we believe. If I had to understand the electronics of a microphone, fully comprehend it, I would never use a PA system. If I had to understand what happened to the Let's see, what did we have this morning? Poached eggs, two on a single piece of toast. If I had to understand the metabolism of the human body on what happened to those two eggs and that toast, I wouldn't have sat down for breakfast. Sisters, good to hear this, right? Life is lived on faith. We trust. We believe. So now we return to God's revelation. There is, first of all, the stark question of St. John, in which he asks us, embarrassingly, how is it that you who are so ready to believe in men are so slow to believe in God? It is assumed that God, who made mankind to speak and made us to believe them, would himself also speak and give us the power to believe. He did so, and he expects us to take his word if we were willing to believe in, you name it, and still labor under, we may be sure, not a few misconceptions because of our simple, easy faith in people. Why not in him? He, therefore, no less than most of what we accept from others, wants us to believe it, even though, just as what others tell us, we do not fully understand. He therefore would speak to us that we should at least be as ready to believe him and put no greater demand on him, that we don't ask any more proof from him than we ask. We have the Chicago Tribune. You have the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It's a toss-up. The simple, naive faith of thousands in devouring the newspapers without questioning. Should we not at least, that is an important adverb, should we not at least be as ready to believe in God as we are to read the daily papers? Our next question is, what did God reveal? First of all, it is quite unnecessary to recount all that God has revealed. In fact, it is impossible. There are too many things that God has said. And a comforting thought, he doesn't expect any one of us even to know all that he revealed. Yet certain things stand out for special attention as we begin the retreat. They are the answers to three of the most important questions we can ask. And as all important questions, they begin with why. All other questions are easy. The hard ones begin with why. Why does God exist? You answer that one. Why do we exist? We think we know the answer. But there's more to the world than God and we. Why does the rest of the world exist? Three good questions deserve more than one-third of a morning's conference. Let us just look at each. Why does God exist? Incidentally, those of you that are teaching grammar school, I think will bear me out. Youngsters nowadays do ask, well, if God made the world, who made God? They don't know what they're asking. That's no help. Most people don't. Why does God exist? First of all, this is an understandable question for us to ask because we apply it to everything else. I didn't know what was going to be on the table. Why does a glass exist? Well, to have water poured into it and that the water from the glass should be taken. Why does a pitcher exist? To hold more water for several glasses to be poured into. Why does a microphone exist? Not just to be spoken into, I've discovered. There are microphones you can talk into that don't communicate. It exists to amplify and communicate at a distance the human voice. Why does paper exist? Well, it depends on the paper. In this case, to write on. So with all these things around us that we keep asking why, naturally we'd ask, why does God exist? We want to know how a thing came to be. What purpose does it serve? But in this case, and we're now in the field of Revelation, the answer of Revelation is surprising, not to say shocking, and it takes a lot of faith to believe it. Not all do. Why does God exist? Because He has to. Now that's a new one. God exists because He has to. God cannot not be. There cannot not have been a God. Those are two very important negatives put together. There cannot not have been a God. He alone must be. So then He never came to be. He always was. That too is a human prejudice. He always is. Talk about the demands of faith. Where nothing in our experience, nothing, beginning with our precious selves, had to exist. That's easy. 9 months, mothers tell me, give or take a few more days. Before we were born, we weren't. And I mean weren't. And what wasn't, clearly doesn't have to be. Logic could not be clearer. So that's us. Beings who don't have to be. God alone must be. Why does God exist? Now this is another new one. For no other purpose than just to be. After we've swallowed that, we try again. Just to be infinitely happy in the self-possession of his own divinity. You see, there couldn't possibly be any other reason or purpose for God to exist than himself. Because that would mean that God somehow needed, and that wouldn't be a God, someone outside of himself to make him either happy or happier. And that is no God. He has no purpose outside of himself for existing. And why? Because while all other beings, and you know whom that means especially, all other beings, all find their fulfillment outside of themselves, God alone, uniquely in himself. You see the mysteries we are touching on. In the heartstrings of human existence, we face when we say that God needs no fulfillment. He is the fullness of being. Our next question, why do we exist? This is a more reasonable question. It's in the category of glasses, pictures, and microphones. Because we didn't always exist. And we know we are not self-sufficient. So in this case, the why is a very intelligent why. The answer, or better, two answers, is in reply to two questions. Because if we are shrewd, we know the question, why do we exist, doesn't really say where. So the first question is, why do we exist in this life? And then the answer given by Revelation hasn't changed. No matter what the study commission says, if you read the $10 book, it isn't worth it. On examining the religion texts currently in Catholic schools and catechetical programs, their evaluation. Sisters, if you don't know this, if you haven't heard, listen. You know where they put the Baltimore Catechism? Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that pedagogy has not improved since the Baltimore Catechism was written. Of course it has. But consistently, on every count, including, may God forgive the researchers, on the matter of revelation, the verdict of some of these smart summer school theologians, I know them. was the Baltimore Catechism rates lowest among all the religion books currently in use. Well, I happen to know some theology. All I can say is, remember we're talking about faith, right? Holding on to this faith. In spite of the sesquipedalian nonsense that's being peddled for the truth. Why do we exist in this life? To know and love and serve God. This is the long and short of it. Covers everything. That's why we're making a retreat. Why do we exist? And the progressive present, I like that term. Why do we exist in the life? Well, as a concession to human language, in the life to come, to enjoy the possession of God. So, why do we exist? To know, love, and serve God here, and to enjoy Him hereafter. However, before we let go of this, why do we exist? There's a connection between those two levels of existence. Connection, that's the understatement of the retreat. The one depends on the other. We shall be happy and as happy in the possession of God in eternity as we know, love, and serve God in time. And I prefer that to here and hereafter. Why? Because such a consolation, especially this service of God, will only last for a time. The reward is eternal. Suppose it were the other way around. Tragedy of tragedies. It's an impossibility. That we would have to serve God eternally to enjoy Him for a time. Among the many things that I've memorized from St. Ignatius, my Father in God, when he was suffering and in trial, he would console himself in prayer by telling God, Lord, let's see, how old am I? It won't last much more.
This conference is continued on Side B.